Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Very pleased to be with you this Memorial Day weekend. As you know, tomorrow is a day to remember and honor military servicemen and women who have lost their lives in service to their country. And so it is that WISO says thank you to them and to all the fathers, mothers, sisters, brothers, sons, and daughters who have served in the military. Up first on today's program, most people of a certain age have clear memories of the war in Vietnam. This week on Senior Voices, we hear from Brenda Stone. Born in 1939 and raised in Jefferson Township, she worked at the Delco Products plant in Kettering for 20 years. Brenda shared her thoughts on the war and its impact with Dayton Metro Library volunteer interviewer Hadley Droge.
I feel sorry for those boys that came back from Nam. Worked with a lot of them in the factory, and they didn't say much about it, really. They wouldn't really talk about it. But it was hard on them when they came home. Somehow you knew, maybe you asked them, I'm not sure, or they might have told you. And I know one of my friend's brothers had gotten killed there. My cousin was in Nam. You know, it just seemed like you knew so many of them around your age that went to Vietnam. You know, we lost 57,000 men. It was pretty sad. You just would hear the count every day of how many Americans were lost, and then they would have to put a figure out there for how many Viet Cong were lost. And it's sad on both sides, you know. Everybody just wants to live. And being a mother, you thought, oh, gosh, how could you stand it when your boys would be over there knowing they're in a jungle and there's snipers in the trees? I know I was out at the VA one day, and my son-in-law had to go to Iraq. I think that's when he had to go to Iraq, you know. My daughter had her husband and her son both over in the Mideast at the same time. But something was said about the Desert War, and he said, oh, that wasn't a war, that was nothing. He said, you know, we were in the jungle with snipers, and I thought to myself, I can't imagine it. I just can't imagine my son-in-law and grandson both got back unscathed. And I was happy about that and worried about my grandson being sent. He and a bunch of his buddies signed up, right? They graduated in 2000 from Miamisburg, and a bunch of them signed up for the Army to get college paid for or whatever. And that's right when, you know, 9/11, right after that, hit the fan. And so things got pretty hectic after that. You just worried. You knew they were going to go. We had to do something. So that's basically what I remember, him and his buddies going off to war. And his one good buddy went into the medics, and he was telling about one time the first day on the job, one of the new recruits got his head blown apart and he's trying to hold it together. And I thought, oh my God, these are just 18, 19-year-old boys. You know, how, as far as any war goes, I don't know why. You know, you wouldn't want to send your baby to war. And I was lucky not to have any of my kids, but I got great-grandsons coming up now, and I know they're going to want to be in the service because their dad was.
That was Brenda Stone speaking with Hadley Droge as part of the Senior Voices project. This interview was edited by Community Voices producer Zebedee Reichert. Senior Voices is a collaboration between the Dayton Metro Library, Rebuilding Together Dayton, and WYSO. The series is made possible through the generous support of the Delmar Healthcare Fund of the Dayton Foundation. A Dayton artist is working on a new way to memorialize victims of the nation's devastating opioid epidemic. The project would create a memorial wall made of hand-cut mosaic tiles. WISO's Jess Mador has the story.
The opioid memorial is called the Wall of Perseverance. It's the brainchild of mosaic artist Jess McMillan, who founded the Mosaic Institute of Greater Dayton. She's also behind an effort to designate an official East Dayton Arts District. McMillan's project was an audience favorite at Economic Development Group Up Dayton's funding contest last month. Now she's working with the city to finalize a location for the memorial. She says the winnings of $3,000 in seed money and volunteer support will help jump start the project.
We are going to open up and invite everyone to come to Dayton and place a piece of mosaic tile onto the wall in remembrance of a loved one lost. And so there will be thousands of pieces on this wall representing thousands of lives, not just in Dayton, but across the nation. So many people have died.
McMillan lost her own mother to a drug overdose in 2001. She says she hopes when it opens next year, the public art installation will symbolize hope and healing in the hard-hit East Dayton community. For WYSO, I'm Jess Mador.
And as you heard in that piece, McMillan is also behind an effort to establish an official East Dayton Arts District. She gave us a little background on why she believes it's important and told us how the city of Dayton is supporting her efforts.
It's maybe three things. One is creating an umbrella, you know, under which to unify the arts that are already here in the area and have been for a long time. So to unify all of us artists, to kind of get a louder and stronger voice, work together to get some attention. And I think, another part of it would be beautification and starting to establish the district with signage, which, the first large painting we're going to do is on the First and Kiwi overpass, train overpass. We got approved through the city to be able to paint East Dayton Arts District right on that. And so when you're coming into East on First Street, you will be welcomed into the area there. And we will probably try to do the train overpass over by the Davis Linden building. There's some paintings underneath, but the overpass itself, probably try to do that one next year. And then approaching some of these neighborhood associations to talk to them about some smaller signage, things like that. I have officially drawn the lines, the zone for the district, and so we have a map. The next step that the city has told me is to go into those neighborhood association meetings and talk to them and get all the neighborhoods that are located in the district, because it's pretty large, on board with just being a part of it, putting some signage up, and going that way. So it is important for, I guess you would say, the east side of Dayton, especially, and even the economy, the artist economy here. It is basically developing a brand as well. And so putting the name to the area and these experiences within the area is going to help us market and draw in those people in the suburbs that we really need to come in here and start supporting the arts and the downtown area.
Artist Jess McMillan talking about her plans to establish an official East Dayton Arts District. She plans to start painting the first overpass at First and Kiwi in mid to late June. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WYSO Weekend. Growing up for many young people involves a little fear, but for some teenagers, fears can become so great that it's hard to find a little bit of fun. That's the subject of today's Dayton Youth Radio. It's the first story from our newest class of young radio producers, students at Bellbrook High School.
My name is Sydney Crane. I'm a junior at Bellbrook High School, and I would like to study computer science and music in college. I was very cautious about doing Dayton Youth Radio because talking to one person is terrifying, let alone talking to everyone listening right now. Everybody is scared of something, but maybe not everybody fears as many things as I do. I'm terrified of public speaking, spiders, heights, germs, and the list goes on. I used to have severe anxiety, which is different than just being nervous. When I was in fifth grade, I played the piano in the talent show in front of the whole school, and I wasn't nervous at all. I loved to show off during music class. It was in middle school that I started having pretty bad panic attacks. They would come when I had to play bassoon solos or talk in front of the class. When I was 8 years old, my anxiety was so bad that my parents and doctors thought I might have an ulcer from all the stress. This problem that I had was debilitating. Every sound, object, or movement seemed like a direct threat to my life. I have gotten tons of advice from professionals, websites, and books. I have tried every single thing they suggested. I've tried breathing exercises, drawing, listening to music, counting up, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, counting down, 98, 97, 96. None of these strategies I tried worked, except for volunteering to go first, which surprisingly helped a lot. For the past 3 years, I've had to perform a bassoon solo in front of judges to receive a score. This has always terrified me and has made me want to quit playing the bassoon, an instrument that I love. But every year, despite my shaking, crying, and inability to breathe, I score the top rating, proving that although my anxiety tries to get in my way, I'm able to succeed in spite of it. It was during a band rehearsal when a senior French horn player, Jack Long, came and talked to me about Dayton Youth Radio. I had written my name on the sign-up sheet and taken one of the release forms. That night, I had it signed by my parents, and I put it in my folder that I bring to school. I wasn't planning on actually turning it in. It is crazy to think that I am doing this right now. I am singing my national anthem to the world. And it goes to show that anyone can overcome their fears. And I know, everyone out there who is afraid of something is laughing in disbelief right now. Your fears seem too big to conquer. But I believe in you. Because, I mean, sometimes my fears still get the best of me. Who am I kidding? I'm shaking right now. This is something that I struggle with, but it isn't something that's going to dictate my life any longer. I'm fed up with my anxiety. I am done being afraid, and I challenge you to be fed up with your fears as well. Don't let them control you any longer. Like I said before, I believe in you.
Close as I am to you, like the bell of liberty, I'll ring a sound that's true.
For Dayton Youth Radio at Bellbrook High School, this is Sydney Crane.
Seasons too. In time, my love may digress with the words we can.
That was Singing the National Anthem, written and produced by Sydney Crane, a junior at Bellbrook High School. Special thanks to Sydney's teacher, Katie Bills Tinney. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Basine Blunt.
I love you by and by. And I don't know if I'd survive.
Such a great start to the new batch of Dayton Youth Radio stories that will be coming out of Bellbrook High School in the weeks ahead. You know, I graduated from Bellbrook in 1983 and would have loved to have become involved in a program like Dayton Youth Radio, but it's here now, and this series is just one example of how WYSO gives voice to our community, our nation, and our world. Support for Dayton Youth Radio comes from the Virginia W. Kettering Foundation and the Ohio Arts Council.
Force our love and let it echo through the land. And if we don't, we may find ourselves washed up with the sand. Oh, I'll tell you that I love you by and by. And I don't know if I'd survive. Without a friend like you in my life.
I'm Jerry Kenney. You're listening to WISO Weekend on WYSO. Thanks so much for joining us this Sunday morning. On June 1st and 2nd in Yellow Springs, Antioch College and the Community Empowerment Organization will host their second Restorative Justice Conference on the Antioch campus. The theme of this year's discussion centers around healing harms in sexual and family violence and the role of restorative justice. CEO Director Jalen Rowe says the conference, just as it did in 2017, will feature expert speakers who are at the forefront when it comes to applying restorative practices to a host of social issues. Jalen, before we talk about this year's conference, let's give folks a reminder about restorative justice. It is an approach to tackling different issues like this.
Exactly. It is a way of healing harms within a set of guidelines. And what we are doing is bringing it out so everyone can see what this is, can have access to it, can meet the practitioners that are doing it. Restorative justice really looks at who has been harmed, why they have been harmed. They've looked at the person that has done the harm, and we start to produce closures because of that.
You have a number of speakers coming in to talk about healing harms in sexual and family violence. Let's tell folks who they'll hear from at this conference.
We have five professionals in their fields that will be speaking on Saturday during the Saturday training, and will be a panel discussion on Friday night. They will be speaking on their work with survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence and discuss the role of restorative practices in deepening healing and closure for victims. And we have the director of Sexual Assault Prevention and Awareness Center at the University of Michigan, Karen Wilmanson, and we have Dr. Joan Pinnell. She is the founder and director of the Center for Family and Community Engagement, and she's a professor of social work at North Carolina State University. And then we're welcoming back Duke Fisher, who has done a lot of work within this area. He was part of our symposium to kick off the restorative justice conferences and symposiums. And Duke is the founder of the Learning Laboratories, and he works in different areas that where he teaches and uses restorative practices. We're inviting back the chief of police of Dayton, Ohio, Richard Bale. And Richard is a wonderful example of how restorative practices are being used within his rank and file and on the streets of Dayton, Ohio. And then we have our beloved Yellow Springs, Raymond Ruka, who will be a speaker on Friday evening. And we invite everyone to come out at the Bryan Center here in Yellow Springs.
As your goal was last year, you mentioned that it was very important for your organization to get people there. So you have a free, open to the public session on Friday.
On Friday night, yes. We want everyone to come out. Just, I mean, if you're curious, if you're a practitioner, if you have dealt with this type of harm in the past, you are welcome. Everyone will benefit. And we're really looking at anyone with the interest in learning about or applying practical, human-centered restorative justice principles and methods. And these can be educators, Jerry. They can be Title IX coordinators. We're looking at business leaders, school counselors. We know this is a problem within our school system. Kids don't just leave the school and then that's the end of it. And going home, that we need to learn how to address these issues. And school workers, everyone is welcome Friday night. Saturday is our training. Saturday, June the 2nd, is our training. And we're going to train on circle practices and just ways to implement and ways to recognize. And Saturday, there is a full training from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. Anyone can go to our registration site and register for this. Now, listen, if you, for whatever reason, we don't care what the reason is, if you can't afford to attend on our regular ticket, no worries. We have wonderful donors who have provided scholarships for anyone who wants to attend. So if you want to attend and you need a scholarship, please just contact me personally, Jalen Rowe, and you can contact me at ceononprofit00@gmail.com. That is ceononprofit00@gmail.com. And if you email me, we'll set you up. We'll get everything worked out for you.
And if you want to just get to the registration process, you can visit tinyurl.com. That's tinyurl.com/RJtickets. Jalen, when we talked last year, restorative justice was a relatively new term, at least it was for me before you explained this process and this approach to dealing with issues. What have you seen in the movement over the last year?
It's a growing effort across the country, yes. And what's interesting, it's a growing effort here in Yellow Springs, Ohio. I recently met with the CEO, founder of the National Association of Community and Restorative Justice when I was visiting in San Antonio. And we sat down and had a wonderful conversation of how this practice is being utilized in so many different areas of our lives. He truly believes that community justice is a wonderful fit for any city, village, metropolitan area, because it gets people thinking and acting towards solutions, toward healing. And then on an individual basis, it moves out from there. On this particular program, the Sexual and Family Violence Restorative Justice Conference, we were really moved to put this together because it is a problem that touches everybody, even if it hasn't happened to them personally. One of the stats that we have is 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men have been victims of some sort, some form of physical violence by an intimate partner within their lifetime. That's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Again, I'm with Jalen Rowe, and we are talking about the second Restorative Justice Conference. It's June 1st and 2nd here at Antioch College, correct?
Yes, Jerry. Friday night, we will open the doors at 7 p.m., and that will be at the Bryan Center for the entire community to attend. Saturday night's training will be on the beautiful Antioch campus at the beautiful Antioch Wellness Center. And we will be in the South Gym there.
So obviously conferences like this are logistically, they're a challenge to put together, but you have a little help from the community.
Yes, we do. We have 2 local sponsors that we are so grateful for. The Yellow Springs Community Foundation, which also sponsored last year's symposium. And we also have the Yellow Springs HRC Commission, which is wonderful because their values, their mission actually falls in line with what we are doing with the community justice conferences and symposiums.
That website for registering is tinyurl.com/RJtickets. I've been speaking with Jalen Rowe. She is the director of the Community Empowerment Organization. And together with Jennifer Berman here at Antioch College, they are bringing you the second Restorative Justice Conference. That's June 1st and 2nd here on the campus of Antioch College. Jalen, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much, Jerry, for having us back again.
Welsh singer-songwriter Judith Owen was born in London in 1969, and her first North American album, Emotions on a Postcard, was released in 1996. Owen is a co-founder of Twankey Records with her husband, Harry Shear. Owen also has a new CD out called Rediscovered, and this week she stopped by the Wiseau Studios to talk about that album and play a few tunes for Nikki Dakota and the Midday Excursions listeners. It was a great treat for us here at the studio, and Double Whammy. Playing with Owen was very prominent electric bass guitarist Leland Sklar, who has contributed to over 2,000 albums as a session musician. He's collaborated with a number of well-known performers and recorded soundtracks to films and television shows. It was an amazing afternoon when they were here. So before we wrap up today, we're going to play one track from Judith Owen and Leland Sklar from Owen's latest CD of cover tunes.
You know, I would just love for you to play a little something from this new release for us.
I would love to, and I'm going to. And it's you can't stop me. You know that.
I know.
I'm just, you know, you said before, it's like these are not just covers. These are reimagined versions of these songs. And so they've become something autobiographical, really, in my life. It's finding my own truth in them, because I just don't believe in doing lazy covers. The originals are the greatest. Why bother doing a lazy cover? I don't do karaoke, as at my new T-shirt state.
I love it.
I don't do karaoke.
And that's
non-ego karaoke.
Is that Latin?
Non-ego karaoke. Thank you very much. So this first songs we're going to do live here with the fabulous Mr. Leland Sklar to my left on bass. It is the first song that I recorded back in the mid-2000s, but I had to bring it back. There were two songs that I included in this collection because they have become such fan favorites. And this is the first one I ever did. And I have to say, I'm so thrilled because the people who you know, I heard this as a kid and was such a massive rock fan, although I don't do that myself. And then to find out that the writers of this song, Deep Purple, love this version makes me the happiest person on the planet. But let's just say, nice. We all know this song. You all know this song. This is my way of bringing the heat.
They all came down to Montreux on the Lake Geneva shoreline to make records where the mobile. And they didn't have that much time. And Frank Zappa and the Mothers were at the best place around. But some stupid fool with a flare gun went and burned the place right to the ground. And all I saw was smoke on the water, a fire in the sky. I saw smoke on the water. I saw to find another place, but a Swiss time, it was rung out. They thought that they would lose the race, and all I saw was smoke on the water, a fire in the sky. I saw smoke on the water, I saw. I
so. Oh, oh, no, 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 no. I saw a.
Singer-songwriter Judith Owen and guitarist Leland Sklar this week on Excursions. And that is it for this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny. And so last week I said we would be back in 2 weeks, and that was not the case. But I can tell you for certain now that after today's program, we will return in 2 weeks. Next week at this time, we're pleased to bring you special programming. It's a celebration of hometown heroes. WYSO is exploring the legacies of Yellow Springs writers Virginia Hamilton and Arnold Adolph in a very special edition of Rediscovered Radio. Until next time.